Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, May 8th. We have three work sessions planned today. At some point, I may start speaking more slowly as we wait for paperwork. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2460.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2460 has an amendment, the dash two, and this provides that the transfer of the homestead in the senior referral program would not be liable for amounts of outstanding deferred property taxes due. And the amendment gave conditions around that so that if the person were to inherit the property or be gifted the property and living in the property, that they wouldn't be relieved of this obligation. From the Legislative Revenue Office, we have no revenue impact, and the Fiscal Office, we have no expenditure.
Thank you. Committee, is there any discussion on this or questions?
Yes.
Thank you. I know when we spoke about a couple of these bills last week, I kind of felt as though we might be going towards having one bill with all of the kind of agreed on things on it. Is that a different bill, or am I anticipating where we're going later?
Representative, there are several bills. The last one we're going to consider today, 2452, has some things combined into it. These two, the conversation during the committee was such that I felt that the members might want to consider them separately.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, you have a good memory. Yes. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the dash two amendment, I'm just wondering if 90 days is enough time when dealing with somebody's, so the example the scenario I'm running in my head is if I were taking care of my parents and they died and they live in Portland and I live in Southern Oregon, I've moved up there to take care of them. Do I have if I need to stay longer than 90 days to prep the house for sale, deal with the death, et cetera? I'm just wondering if that's long enough to still not be sucked into liability.
Department of Revenue, do you have any comment on this issue that's just been raised by one of our members?
And just to clarify, I like the idea of putting the limits in there. I'm just questioning whether 90 days is enough time for that.
That's a good point.
So, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Mark Arst with the Department of Revenue. So this is language that's currently in our administrative rule, and I believe that 90 days is basically the minimum amount of time that somebody would have. And the reason that we chose 90 days is that we did want to give people the ability to basically, if the house is completely underwater, if the mortgage is so big, if the senior deferral debt is so large that they would actually be taking on a huge liability, we want to give them the ability to get out of that situation, basically. And that's why we chose the 90 days. But again, I think it actually is going to function like a minimum. My recollection is that we don't actually start collection until the August 15th following the date of death. And so it could be that somebody would get quite a bit longer than that because we just wouldn't have started the collection activity yet. And so that I can follow up with you on that, but I'm pretty sure that that's the situation.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Chair Nathanson, I move the dash two amendment be adopted in House Bill 2460.
Representative Marsh moves the dash two amendment adopted into House Bill 2460. Any further discussion on that amendment? Any objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2460 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2460 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on this main motion? Any objections? Motion passes. And we're going to name the carrier. It's not written on my notes. Sorry about that.
Madam Chair,
did
we have fiscal or revenue? I wouldn't expect there to be any, but I don't see any statements in OLS yet.
Go ahead. For that bill, we have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you.
2460, Representative Marsh, would you mind carrying this one?
Sure.
Thank you. Anything else? We've concluded our business on House Bill 2460. I'm closing the work session on 2460, opening the work session on House Bill 2587.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. So House Bill 2587 deals with the senior deferral program again, and this deals with the prohibition on reverse mortgages. So currently, the only properties that are eligible for the senior deferral program with a reverse mortgage are those that were grandfathered in pre-2011. So this is the bill that would allow those properties that have a reverse mortgage from 2011 to 2017 potentially into the program, subject to the same requirements that are already in the program with the addition of the 40% equity stake that the homeowner has to have in the property. And so just a side note on the senior deferral program, it's not a tax expenditure because the property taxes are still getting paid to the local governments through the Department of Revenue and to the schools. So it's a deferral program. So from the revenue impact point of view, there is no direct revenue impact. The information that we have on the senior deferral participants currently within the within the program with reverse mortgages are that for the Department of Revenue, approximately $2,600 is paid out annually per participant in the program. And there are currently 750 pre-2011 participants with a reverse mortgage. The Department of Revenue estimates that there are potentially 4,000 individuals that have a reverse mortgage in Oregon that could qualify but may not qualify under other circumstances for age or income or something like that. And of course, not all of those individuals would apply. And so those are the numbers that are relevant to these applicants that might come in from 2011 to 2017. And as some side notes, you might recall that the current value of the fund is sitting at approximately $42 million, and the current payments into the fund are exceed the payments that are going out.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Jamie. I clearly keep missing this in our conversations. From 2017 forward, have we reallowed reverse mortgages? I'm trying to figure out where that, what's stopping it at 17, or did we say, no, for real, we can't do them? What is that particular range of dates?
So Chair Nathanson, Representative Smith-Warner, so from up to 2011, there are some program or participants in the program that have a reverse mortgage. And from then on, the current statute doesn't allow additional participants with reverse mortgage at all. So okay. From 2011 back, there are some. From 2011 forward, not. This bill would then say, okay, we're going to allow some more up to 2017. The sort of interesting caveat about that is, so you would have had to, if this bill were to pass, you would have had to enact a reverse mortgage between 2011 and 2017, and at the time of application have a 40% stake in your, or 40% equity in your property. So for instance, in 2030, you could apply for the senior deferral program and have had a reverse mortgage implemented in, say, 2012, if this were to pass. But if you had applied in 2030 and had enacted a reverse mortgage with your bank in 2018, you wouldn't be eligible.
So, follow up.
Yes.
So what is the 20, I guess that's what I'm trying to get to, is either, what I'm wondering is, should we either allow reverse mortgages or not? Why this, just these six more years? Maybe Rev Marsh.
Well, my understanding is that reverse mortgages have been adjusted so that to obtain one, you have to prove that you can pay your local taxes. So that's a change that's happened in the last, to affect reverse mortgages that are issued after 2018. So it shouldn't be an issue for those individuals.
Okay. Thank you. I just knew there had to be a reason for that date. What is that? Okay. Thank you.
Representative Rushkey?
Just on the, just discussion-wise, I'm trying to figure out why someone would need, if they're cash poor, so cash poor that they need the senior deferral and they need a reverse mortgage, I'm kind of thinking they're in the wrong home at that point. Because you're getting streams from two different areas. One's an actual stream of income. Another one is eliminating a liability you have. And I just have a hard time allowing both. I think you pick one or the other, but I'm not a big fan of allowing both.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Representative Rusky. I believe it puts us in a weaker position for a deferred mortgage on when it comes time to liquidate everything by the time you get or deferred property taxes. I just think it weakens our position, and I have a concern about that. I mean, we already heard when we had other analysis of, you know, that the fund has had some leakage in the past of substantial amounts of money on some bad decisions, and I think anything that would degrade and weaken us may not be the best course to take.
Thank you. I have a question and a comment, possibly. I'm wondering, Jane, if we have any evidence for those reverse mortgages that have been in the program, the ones prior to 2011, if there's any indication of higher defaults on those property tax repayments.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, yeah, I believe that the program was restructured around the time of the recession because of the reverse mortgages. Also, I think it was called Oregon Program Independence, where there was money being swept from the fund each year, or when the size got large enough. I think currently the Department of Revenue says that they absorb about $500,000 per year based on defaults. And those kind of have hit a bit of, they're a little higher than they were maybe about 10 years ago. They were around 200,000, but they don't seem to be growing right now.
Okay, but then just to be totally clear, did reverse mortgages hold any particular weight in those defaults, or is it sort of just a collection of incidents and circumstances that cause people to go into default? Do we have that information?
I don't have the information on the historical reverse mortgages. The Department of Revenue might.
No. Well, a comment.
Would you like to hear from Department of Revenue?
Sure, although I see a.
Weakens our position.
No, so.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, again, Mark Arce with the Department of Revenue. So, Representative Marsh, to answer your question, I went and asked our folks whether they knew if more of the money that was written off was related to reverse mortgages than to conventional mortgages, and it would have literally required us going back through every write-off that we had done in order to determine that, and we haven't done that analysis. So, I can't really say with any certainty whether that $500,000, you know, whether a higher percentage of that is related to reverse mortgages, given, I mean, we know that the majority of the mortgages that we have in the deferral program are conventional mortgages. So it would be a question of, is they getting more than its share of the write-off? And I cannot answer that question.
Certainly. When back in the day, when we did allow those reverse mortgages in, did we have an equity requirement?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, no, we didn't. So that's okay. Something new.
So this is a new sideboard?
We actually requested that amendment working with Representative Meek when he brought this bill in the policy committee. And so, you know, we've been asked this question before, is will, you know, this weaken the department's position? And obviously, I think that the, you know, what you guys are saying is absolutely correct, that you'll now have two people who are kind of after the same stream of money. We basically function like a reverse mortgage. The balance mm-hmm. of the deferral loan is growing over time. I think that, you know, the comments that have been made are right kind of where we're at. There will be some risk. We're not really able to quantify it. We do know that right now the deferral fund is strong. We know that right now the deferral fund grows every year because the amount of money that we're paying out in taxes is less than we're collecting on repayments. And we expect that this will have some effect on that, but how large, we don't really know. Jamie had commented on how many there are of these out there total. You know, Representative Meek had given us some information a couple years ago that there were 3,800. We estimate based off of that information that now there might be 4,500. And so that we think is the total pool. How many of those people will apply for senior deferral? How many of those people can qualify? How many of those people will have enough equity? And then how many of those people will actually see some default? The risk keeps getting smaller because you keep weeding people out, but we can't quantify it, unfortunately. We wish we could.
Thank you.
Representative Smith. Thank you, Madam Chair. This morning I'll be a yes on this, but I do want to point out, as soon as you find yourself with a second deed of trust, for all points and purposes, you're unsecure. I doubt the state's going to liquidate a first deed of trust to go after its cash position and assume all the liabilities that go with a residence. I would point out just another thought. When an individual or individuals decide to do a reverse mortgage, it's important to understand that's their asset. It's no different than cash or gold or anything else. It has value. And so I kind of take an opposite view of, if we can help someone remain in their home and utilize their assets that they built up over time or through some other circumstance they've obtained, and allow them to maintain a little bit of independence, I think that's a good thing.
Representative Marsh. And I just affirm those comments as well. Thank you, Rep. Smith. Really what we should be looking at is what the costs of taking someone out of their home could be, and where the burden for paying those costs is likely to go if someone is unable, has no assets to stay in their own home. Most likely that person at some point is going to wind up on public support in another institution that's going to cost us all a whole lot money than any sort of property taxes that we might lose in the process of keeping them in their own homes. And again, in the majority of cases, the asset is going to cover these. It's just a deferred an ability to use the benefits of that asset in the current moment rather than to have to wait until the asset is liquidated far down the line. So I also think this is a smart and compassionate adjustment to the current law. And I think there are enough kind of sidebars on this that the risk to the state is pretty minimal.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my concern is we're in a rip-roaring economy and we're making this policy. And I would prefer us to try to make policies that consider another downturn rather than saying, well, the fund's growing and this is good, so therefore we can do this. What happens when the fund isn't good and we're going the other way and revenue is poor? I'm just really concerned that we're making a policy based on great economic conditions, and that's not, I don't think that's good policy going forward.
Any additional discussion on this one? Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to acknowledge your concern about that. And at the same time, I am ultimately going to be comfortable with this bill because of the sideboards. I mean, I think the having to have a 40% equity in and that there is a deadline, and as opposed to going forward, because we're already 2 years beyond anybody that would have gotten into one of these reverse mortgages. So I do want to acknowledge I hear you, and I share your, and I affirm some of your concerns. And at the same time, I believe that because we have the sideboards that we do, I'm going to be comfortable with this. And as our former chair used to say, we can always come back.
Representative Finley.
Thank you, Chair. And I agree. I had dinner the other night with a lady that lives in Portland. She has a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home with 1,600 square feet. Her property taxes are $11,000 a year. That will eat away at your equity pretty darn fast in a few years' time. It's not like we're talking a few $100 home. I mean, this, and she is now 66 years old, and she would fully qualify for this program. And you may start at a 40% equity point, but in a few years, at some of these tax rates, you're not going to be there very long, very fast. So that just gives me concern. So.
Thank you. I think we're ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2587 amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh has moved 2587A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Reschke.
No.
Rep. Smith.
Aye.
Rep. Smith Warner.
Aye.
Vice Chair Finley.
No.
Vice Chair Marsh.
Aye.
Chair Nathan.
Aye. The motion has received the required majority. The motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Meek. There's no other business on this bill, correct? All right, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2587A. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2452.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I'm just gonna ask Austin to bring up a little table and make it grow. House Bill 2452 began as Representative Finley's bill on establishing an alternative cap of $250,000 for properties that might not otherwise qualify for the senior deferral program in essentially rural areas where the cap was lower. That bill has been amended with the dash two to include some components from Bill 2103 that the Department of Revenue had in a 10-year sunset. So we have the original bill, and we now have a 10-year sunset, and there is established with the dash two, a late filing pathway, which didn't really exist formally before, and a fee to address that. And then there's a delinquent interest sharing between the Department of Revenue and local governments that essentially says that the Department of Revenue doesn't take all of the delinquent interest once the property has been liquidated and the monies are collected. In the revenue impact for this bill as amended, so dealing with the alternative cap in our office, estimated approximately 35 additional properties might be added annually, and this might increase payments by the dedicated fund of approximately $100,000 a year, because additional properties that reach up to that $250,000 cap may qualify. And the dash two, the additional streamlining and technical changes, we didn't find additional financial impacts or revenue impacts from that. So the, again, just with the caveat that there's no direct revenue impact because this is not a tax exemption or tax expenditure, the property taxes will still get paid to the local governments. It's a deferral program from the fiscal office. They issued an indeterminate and described that that it was uncertain how much work by the assessors that additional those additional properties that come on the roll are that are dealt with through the Department of Revenue Senior Deferral Program, how much more work that might cause for them. And in the same discussion that you just had, the potential additional defaults that might come from additional properties that enroll in the senior deferral program. So they were uncertain about that as well.
Thank you. Discussion on this bill.
Chair Nathanson, thank you. I'd just like to thank the staff, the LRO staff, for combining and herding this on through, and the Department of Revenue for coming up with this. I think this was a good bill to start with, but I think it's a much better bill now with all their work and assistance. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Anything else? We're ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -2 amendment be adopted into House Bill 2452.
Representative Mark moves the -2 amendment into House Bill 2452. Any discussions? Objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson and I move House Bill 2452 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2452 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Thank you. The carrier will be Representative Findley. Thank you for carrying that. There's no other business on this bill. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2452. We're done for the day. We're adjourned.